What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And oh boy, we got a big old stack for you today. So let's get into it with Amazing
Old Stack
Spider-Man.
From Young Men. That's the way we do
Are you guys going out clubbing after this? Because I'm hitting the clubs.
Yep, clubbing is what people call it now.
Yeah, they call it the discotheque, right? Yeah.
Can't wait to go discoing with all my best pals. Like Amazing Spider-Man and Venom Death Spiral, number one from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, Al Ewing, and Charles Soule, art by Jesus Saiz. This is a kickoff to a nine-part storyline that's going to be running through Amazing Spider-Man and Venom that introduces a new superpowered serial killer called Torment. We don't find a lot about them until the end of this issue when we find out, and I should mention a spoiler warning for all of the books that we're going to be talking about in the stack here today, but we find out he is slowly killing off members of Peter Parker and Eddie Brock's family. Who is he doing it for? Why? We'll find out as the storyline goes on. We also catch up with the status quo of Venom, who is currently Mary Jane, Spider-Man, who is currently Peter Parker. Not always a given.
Not always and true. Carnage, sort of not lately, really, honestly.
Not lately. And Carnage, who is Eddie Brock. So everybody's doing a little bit of the old mix-em-ups. Find out about their status quos as we get into this big event. What'd you think about the kickoff here, fellows?
Pete, you like all this murder,
Goop,
Mary Jane, spirals. Mary Jane dating other people that aren't.
Before
Peter Parker.
We were getting on, you were talking about how much you love spirals. So take it away, Pete.
Well, it's I'm.
No, he said he loved bugles.
I do love bugles. Oh, yeah. Have you tried the new ranch flavor?
I love that Pete's on. We're like, Pete, do you want to read this comic? No, I'm sick of that. The comics. New bugle flavor? Yes, please. I will be there. The stack is what he calls bugles.
All right, first off, crazy.
The Daily Bugle is what Pete's having right now.
Oh, boy. Crazy cover. I think it sets up a good kind of tone because this is darker than the normal kind of Spider-Man comic. There's just this impending doom that's kind of circling. But the part that pissed me off the most, first off, I thought it was like they had this one page thing that like Marvel proudly presents. And I was like, you put a whole page into that? It just says,
proud.
So I was like, oh, it seems a little cocky. You know what I mean? So that threw me off a little bit.
I always say I'm proud to present my friend Pete and Alex.
For the first time anywhere. They do this in a lot of comics, Pete. This is not a
but it was a whole page. I was like, that's
they do it as a whole page sometimes. Look at DCKO. They're doing the same thing.
Okay. Anyways, all that to be said,
Bad.
It was a little heartbreaking.
DC zombie is what you are.
It's real heartbreaking that MJ left him a message and he just deleted it like it meant nothing to him.
I was like, Pete's going to be pissed. He's deleting all these. You can't delete a message from Aunt May.
Winding up like he's Bugs Bunny throwing a pitch.
Yeah.
Get ready, and then he hits you with the old MJ.
It didn't feel like Spider-Man to me because it was very cold of him just to be fucking deleting these messages like that meant nothing to him. So that really threw me off.
Do you think when he was deleting all the messages, do you think he should have said, deleted, like Homestar Runner? That would have been like a fun current reference.
Huh. Didn't expect you or anyone to say that ever again. And here we are. Pete, it's very funny to me. Do you save all of your messages?
I have some saved messages.
Well, how many do you have from Alex or I?
Save? And how many do you have from Eddie Brock?
Zero.
I really like this. I thought this was a great kickoff to this event. My dogs are barking, as I always say about this book. I've been really enjoying Spider-Man. I really enjoyed the Eddie Brock Carnage, and I enjoy Venom running with Al Ewing, and I think they're all in tip-top form here. I think, like I was saying, this did a really good job of getting you caught up with the continuity while still being a fun book on its own right. These are all fun, weird, quirky status quos, but there's also a good amount of emotion going on here, particularly with the sweet MJ and Flash Thompson scene, as well as all the stuff going on with Peter Parker and Aunt May, I thought was great as well. And there's a lot of danger for all of these characters. Torment seems like a bad guy. I sure hope he doesn't have a symbiote because I'm sick of that, but he probably does.
What? He is a symbiote.
I don't know. Like maybe. He just has like a...
He's definitely I mean, I guess you're saying because he's texting with Carnage.
Right.
You think they'd
sexting,
be doing,
if you will.
Yeah, sexting. Mexting for murder texting. That's what I do.
So,
Maybe it's sexting, like S-Y-X, like a symbiont? I don't know.
So Alex thought the darkness was fun. I thought the darkness was a lot and didn't feel like Peter Parker.
Jason says, what's your... thought the darkness was just
fine.
I
really enjoyed this. I feel like this book really owns the sort of strangeness of the status quo of these characters in a way that I feel like I haven't seen, especially when you're sort of setting the table for this event to be like, Mary Jane used to date Peter Parker, dated Paul, now they're living together, but now she's sort of flirting with Flash in a way that I was like, oh, okay. Like, they were able to sort of own the wild continuity for all these, like, characters that used to be just... This is like season 9 of Friends, where you're like, wait, who's doing what now? And why are you doing that? None of you make sense. But owning that while still propelling
Ross
the story
and Rachel,
forward.
MJ and Peter in this?
They've been married and divorced multiple times. They were on a break and pivot, I think is what we're talking
about. Well, and I just want to say in terms of the way that they're putting this crossover together, I'm usually not a fan of the Alpha Omega issue. I don't think this is going to have like an Omega issue. I think it ends in either Spider-Man or Venom. But I actually think it was really worth it here. Because maybe you're reading Venom, but not Spider-Man, though you probably are. Maybe you almost definitely didn't read Eddie Brock Carnage. So getting caught up while still moving those stories forward individually, I thought was really well done. It was a good one-shot.
Definitely, while also having like a truly devastating subplot that has laid out like it, the mystery of it has unspooled really well. That it is, we find out at the end that Carnage has been texting these secret details that it keeps finding out from Eddie about all these characters. And that's who is being killed randomly, or people who are somehow named Brock or Parker or whatever. Like, that's awesome. And it's brutal, and it's that sort of casual murder that I think was Carnage's whole first thing. Was that reckless serial killer that, like, was the scary part of Carnage. And we're doing that again in this such a sideways continuity way, but it really worked, I thought.
It is funny, now that you bring it up, that, like, that's how Venom was introduced as the evil Spider-Man, and they're like, oh, he's pretty cool. Maybe he's an anti-hero? I don't know. And they're like, oh, no, now Venom is an anti-hero. I guess we have to come up with a bad Venom. Here's Carnage, and now Carnage is an anti-hero, and they're like, oh, gotta come up with an even worse Carnage somehow. Yeah. Uh-oh.
Why do we have that's Carnage what... text a worse Carnage?
Do you know what the real death spiral is? The quality of Marvel Comics. That's what Pete, a DC booster, would say.
Take it easy.
Prove me wrong, because we're going to move on and talk about Absolute Wonder Woman number 17 from DC Comics.
Hold this book's feet to the fire, Pete.
Prove you're not a DC zombie, a term that I just made up. Written by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman.
This issue,
the second part of the story, Diana is being taken down by the new Suicide Squad, seemingly led by Absolute Zatanna, but Zatanna nopes out pretty quickly in this issue, and most of it is a fight with Giganta, among other characters. Yes. Pete, you're pumping your fists like the true DC fan you are. Tell us why Marvel stinks and DC rules with a Z.
Stop it. Yeah, first off, look at this cover. I mean, cool cover alert. This is awesome.
Any details you want to offer up about the cover?
One big, one small, character-wise.
Yeah, there we go.
We got a one big, one small sitch.
Yeah, it's the classic cover, one big, one small.
Now, on this cover, Giganta is reaching up and holding the Absolute Wonder Woman logo.
Crushing it with her arms.
Well, my question is, do you think she knows it's there, or is she just, like, steadying herself on something? If she looked up, she'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. She's definitely like, whoa, and grabs it to hold from falling down.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Like a bar in the shower, if you're, like, old.
Yeah, oh, man.
Whoa. I have bars all over my shower.
Exactly.
Yeah, I need bars all over my shower. I'm constantly pulling shit off the wall.
That's the oldest thing you could have said right there. Besides a reference to Homestar Runner, but no one did that.
Yeah,
no one
did that.
Crazy last panel. Love this comic. Amazing art. Amazing battle sequences. I just think this was, I mean, the match moment was really cool that kept happening. Just this comic rocks. I mean, it's just it's so much fun. It's kind of turned up to 11 in a lot of different ways.
Mm.
You know, she kind of gets her powers back in this issue. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's a really, I'm going to make a controversial statement. We like this comic.
Yeah.
We
on a regular basis.
It continues to be great. I think we're all enjoying it. Here's one criticism. I think we need to put a cap on the length of the Zatanna spell. We can't do 20.
There's a very long one.
We can't do 20
sure.
words backwards. We can't read that. But somewhere.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I didn't read that. Like the first,
Alex,
I challenged myself. I challenged myself to read the shorter ones. The other ones, I was like, this is a magic spell.
Sound off in the comments.
I'll see what happens.
If you don't read all of Zatanna's backward spells,
I can't do it.
Because I'll tell you what, I see one, and I'm not talking about this book, but all Zatanna appearances, I'm like, oh, this backwards thing. Well, I guess I'll read it. And it takes a minute. You know, it takes a little second to flip your brain. Yeah. But that's how I feel every time. I'm a real fan, so I read it.
My problem is, like, I don't know what order you need to read the words in, and it sometimes is very inconsistent. Like, sometimes it's like the words are in the right order, but they are backwards, and sometimes everything she says is backwards. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's very tough.
I think often the whole thing is like mirror imaged and you just have to flip
it. But it's not mirror imaged because the letters are the right way.
Right. But like, I guess I mean in that the whole thing is flipped.
How does your mirror work?
Yeah. My mirror has two faces.
Another very current reference. I thought this issue was great as well. One of the things that we get big fights throughout this series, but this is just like a knockdown, drag-out brawl as Wonder Woman gets bigger to match Gigantic's size.
Awesome.
And it's fun. Like, this title is heartfelt, it's sweet, it's big, it's powerful. But this also plays off like a goofy, fun issue, which we don't get quite as often from the series. And it's just great. Paired with Hayden Sherman's art, they can draw anything.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Murder Drones, number one from Odie Press, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Joy B. Young. This is based on the enormous hit success Glitch production series, which is streaming on YouTube. It is adapted from that, and there's a lot of hype going into this. I'll fully admit, I've never watched Murder Drones, so if you are tuning into this on YouTube or listening on the podcast, to be like, ooh, what do these Murder Drones experts think? We are not. So I'm curious to hear from that perspective, unless you are, what do you think of this?
I was not a Murder Drone person, but this does have the energy of, it's written with like extreme confidence. The art is really fun. It moves quickly. It has that comedy energy. Like, I was like, oh, this is a fully realized universe. And learning about it, like, I was like, oh, it makes sense. It also is that. But even so, there's a lot of fully realized universes that when they are made into a comic, it doesn't quite work. And I think this really did.
Yeah, I was surprised because when I heard the title, I thought, ooh, this is going to be dark, you know. But I was surprised.
Because of the murder.
And the drones.
You don't like either of those things.
Well, I think combining them kind of, to me, has a, like, oh, shit, this is going to be fucked up. It's about drones murdering people all over the place. Drones
are
usually popular.
They're delivering
kids
your
have
pieces.
Drones, and then, you know, like, just takes one bad drone to start murdering people.
So,
yeah,
wait,
that's
now,
what
real
I always
quick.
Say. You're one bad drone away from being me.
Now, Pete, you live in the country, so you probably don't have technology, but, like, so this would be like a drone would be like a bird bringing you something.
Yeah, thanks.
Or like
man.
a bird holding like a camera,
a gun.
Yeah. A bird with a gun. Well, that's gotta keep you up nights, right, Pete?
How does it press the trigger with its wings? I can't do it with the wings.
No.
Does it get another bird to use its little bird?
Yeah, two birds. Bird collab.
It's like I always say, it takes two birds to fire a gun. Yeah. I like this as well. I particularly called out the art. I thought it was very slickly realized and good characters. We didn't really mention the plot, but it is about a world where I think all the humans died and robots have been left behind. Some of the robots are...
It's a darker take on WALL-E is how I like to pitch it.
Sure. Yeah, that's how I was going to pitch it as well, for sure. But good designs, intriguing characters, definitely made me curious to check out the animated series, which is probably a large part of the point of doing this. But as always, Wyatt Kennedy knows what they're doing when it comes to the writing. So good kickoff here.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
Ultimates number 21 by Marvel. So I know, Pete, you're not going to like it. Written by Dennis Camp, art by Per Perez. We're tying into the Ultimate Endgame event. In this issue, we're focusing in on Luke Cage and his new Avengers, who are working to free North America from the Maker and his minions. Standing in their way is not Roberto da Costa, but his father, who I believe is Nia da Costa, if I remember correctly.
Yep, that's the name of that person.
Yep, absolutely. And he is leading a team of defenders to take down the new Avengers in a extremely The Boys way by manipulating media and spinning off movie rights and things like that. Things don't go quite in their direction by the end of the issue. What'd you guys think about this?
I really enjoy this. Like, the Dennis Camp, like, the
you
ultimate.
Camping?
I'm camping. I'm beyond camping. I'm glamping with my man Camp. Dennis Camp like continues to take, like, you know, we're doing this. It's a rebellion. There's a battle happening, but adding on all these additional layers that we're getting these sort of X-Force ecstatics style team that is usually treated as sort of a satire, but we're riding first person with the media darling team. And this is the villains. And I actually am like, oh, this makes a lot more sense. I'm definitely rooting for them to get smashed, which is what we get to have happen here. At the same time, like in the middle of this universe ending crossover, where Dennis Camp's taking the time to really get Roberto da Costa's revenge on his father, and like introducing these like characters from that we know from the main Marvel universe, but we haven't really encountered their ultimate versions much, but we're really taking the time to explore these relationships. That's just great in-depth writing that's happening in the midst of a pretty sick battle sequence.
Yeah. All the thing I wanted to add, I agree with all that, is cool cover. It's, you know, a lot of crazy over the top action. Great art. You don't fuck with the Frost Queen. You know what I mean?
Is everything all right? Did that drone comment really age you, Pete?
No, you it hurts like Pete to say something nice about Marvel because he's all in on DC. I think this is better than Ultimate Endgame. This is giving me the charge I want from Ultimate Endgame. Like the, yeah, fuck yeah, we're taking down the bad guys. Plus, as usual, this very specifically is reflecting the world outside our window, and Dennis Camp isn't even being subtle about it in terms of they are going to take our tools and use them against us. Like, not to get too political here on the podcast, but look what the government says about Antifa, which is anti-fascist. They're like, oh, they're an organization that has tried to take down the government. And it's like, no, it's a philosophy that is anti-fascist. That's the whole point of it. But the fascists are using that language against people. And that's what he's playing off of here. But at the same time, giving us an absolutely brutal superhero issue throughout. There's, I don't know how this is not red bad, given the stuff that goes on some of the pages.
A lot of hands cut off in this comic.
Yes. This is also one of the things that's kind of crazy about this is we meet all of these characters we haven't met in the Ultimate Universe yet, but they all have different costumes and names. And you're like, wait, no, that's Deadpool, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You're not calling it Deadpool? Just,
okay. But Deadpool awesome. With a different color.
Yeah, it's cool.
I love that. Like, I love to take the time to introduce them and make them different. That's what, you know, gets a little spark on a random page in the middle of this comic. Mm-hmm. And these sparks all add up to make this comic really pop off in the same world where the main title is sort of like, I think, not having as many of those pop-off moments, despite the fact that it's telling this big super story at the same time.
Yeah, particularly when I've been generally whelmed with a lot of the finale stuff going on with the Ultimate Universe, this rocks. So, yeah. Great title. The Peril of the Brutal Dark, an Ezra Kane mystery, number one from DC Comics, written by Chris Condon, art by Jacob Phillips. This is another Vertigo title. Should have mentioned Vertigo.
You should have.
And it is really a noir adventure that has planned multiple volumes. We talked to the team a couple of months back about the title. You can go listen to it in the Comic Book Club feed and check it out. Justin, I know you're a big fan of this team and this book,
Yeah,
so
Justin,
take it away.
I've loved these guys from all the way back to their first stuff with That Texas Blood. I was hyping this up on the live show as well. Almost word for word is what I'm saying.
It took some prodding for you to hype this up.
Well, you were like, Pete, what are you looking forward to? And then Alex was like, Justin, what are you looking forward to? And Pete was like, I know. What are you, magic? What are you, sort of magic man?
Well, I just know what's in your wheelhouse, and this is your wheelhouse. You know what I mean?
Pete, I'm unexpected. I'm a chaos agent. Okay,
you can't say I know what you're going to choose to one of us, and then us be like, yeah, sure, I'll lead into that. I'm going to fall into that trap.
Hell
thank
yeah.
you.
And actually, I did hype up a different book if you knew before I got to this one, but I was going to hype this one, and I do like this because I actually think this is the book that I feel like, from a first issue perspective, especially. It's just the top of their game work here. If you like Indiana Jones, pulp novels, there's noir elements here.
It was like Dick Tracy meets Indiana Jones.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great call. There's some magic here, and it just like...
Dick Jones.
Yeah, Dick Jones, guys. You're jonesing for some dick. This is the book for you, is what Alex is saying. Jacob Phillips' work is really excellent, and it's different. Like, to have an artist be able to change their style up and have it still be excellent on a title like this is awesome. It's such a great Vertigo part of the kickoff for the Vertigo relaunch.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's really just fantastic. The combination of art and storytelling is such next level, and everybody loves little Dick Jones, so it's a tight package, you know. And I also love the back matter. You're getting a lot for your buck here.
Vertigo. I guess my only criticism is that it's not called a Dick Jones mystery, given the character is named Dick Jones, which is confusing, but. Maybe they'll figure it out in the second issue.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Universal Monsters, The Phantom of the Opera, number one from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Tyler Boss, art by Martin Simmons. As you can probably tell from the title, this is the latest Universal Monsters spinoff. I chatted with the creative team the other day. You can also listen to that in the Comic Book Club
T-Boss.
Feed. T-Boss and M. Simmies. And this is not based on the musical that played once at the glorious Pantages
Theater.
Yeah, you guys talk about
it. It's actually gloriously restored, Alex.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I don't come from Hickville, USA. So.
I'm so sorry.
I saw Phantom of the Opera on Broadway the way it was meant to be seen, a.k.a. bad.
Oh, let me ask you, Alex, was the theater gloriously restored that you saw?
Yeah. I don't know.
Probably.
I do know that there was a very slow chandelier that was like...
Yes, natural. But let me ask you, did you buy Phantom by phone and call the Pantages Theater? Tickets are going fast.
My parents bought the ticket. Yeah.
Okay, great.
I was very young.
Well, let me say just real quick, I lived so far from Toronto, and they were running these ads like crazy in upstate New York. I was like, am I flying to Toronto to see Phantom of the Opera? They said they thought a 10-year-old like me should. And here I am.
This is based on the Universal Monster movie, not on the musical. It validated the last 5 minutes of this podcast. But this is still the same sort of story with Christine. She's trying to make her way in the opera. There is, as you might expect, a phantom somewhere under the opera. The thing that I really liked about this is that it leaned into Martin Simmons' art style.
Yes.
By allowing, for the first time in any iteration I've seen, the phantom to almost be a phantom. Like, there is actually potentially something supernatural going on here, and that's cool.
Yeah, I really love the art style, especially the singing panels. It was just such a expressive, artistic way to kind of show that. was just really, really impressive. Yeah, I love the ending. It was very exciting. You kind of hyped to see what's going to kind of all unfold. It took me a little bit because I saw, you know, it was Poto, and I was like, oh, I love Phantom of the Opera. I've been you to do, the Glorious Restored Pantages Theater, Poto. You know, so I have a certain, and when the chandelier fell and I was front row, I was nervous, you know, yeah. So it was a real experience. So you when had, this you wasn't had like, that.
Pete, you had like 5 minutes to get out of the way of that chandelier. Like you
came fast in Toronto, bro. Yeah, you know, okay. It was coming quick.
You shouldn't have been on the stage, though, I think is the main answer here.
Yeah. Well, it's hard.
Wait, just real quick.
Down.
So you called it when you're out on the weekend seeing Phantom of the Opera, you're like, I'm Poto.
I'm going Poto.
I'm Poto in Ronto this weekend.
That's right. Okay. You go Poto Ronto, and then you're set, you know? But I still, once I got over the Poto of it, I fell in love with the art and was intrigued by a new story. So I'm excited.
The way that they were able to turn this into, it's hard to recover from the absolute nonsense we've been talking
Wanna
about.
Panta, go Poto and
I think we've lost every listener we've ever had.
No, everyone's leaning in. It's just I still want to have a good, solid review.
What else are they going to say about the Pantages Theater?
Yeah, I have
restored,
to know.
Alex,
tell me about this basically PSA these two idiots heard 20 to 30 years ago.
I gotta turn this on half speed so this bit goes even longer. Oh my god!
Not a bit, Alex. It's a reality. This is an excavation of Pete and my childhood, and it's important. Yeah. And we live hundreds of miles away, and yet look. We were able to come together about the gloriously restored Pantages Theater. This book is excellent. The pivot to make it truly a horror story and the Martin Simmons art to really lean into that, like we're saying, I think really elevates this. Yeah. I can't imagine there's a lot of comic book fans who are like, I'm also a massive Broadway head, but I would recommend this to anyone who just likes a good horror comic, and especially if you've been enjoying any of these Universal Monster books, this is really just right in line with the rest of them.
Yeah, someone should tell Schuykler because he asked the question on the live show about horror comics, and this is definitely a good one.
If only you had a direct line to him. The Punisher, number one from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Jose Luis Sors.
The Purse?
This is actually a continuation of the Punisher Red Band series that Benjamin Percy did, where Punisher was brainwashed by Kingpin and forced to do his bidding. He ripped the brainwashing chip out of his brain. Microchip had helped him put it there, and he's trying to decide whether to kill Microchip, his friend, or not. Meanwhile, there's some other big moves going on in the city. Tombstone has been arrested. Kingpin's fate is left in the air. We're supposed to presume he's dead. He's definitely not. And Jigsaw is back. Jigsaw, who, if you don't know, his power is he has a lot of scars.
Yeah, he used to look like Frank Castle. And now he's pissed about it.
But he's not a clone or twin or anything. They just look alike vaguely. Right?
Weren't they?
Are you thinking about Hush and Bruce Wayne?
Everyone talks about Jigsaw like they were like mirror images, and like no, they're just like white dudes with black hair who are fucked up. But like it's being positioned like Jigsaw is a Hush type character for Frank Castle, but he's not at all. He's just like a goon who keeps coming back.
He looks like him. Yeah, but anyways, Jigsaw is not my favorite of the Punisher villains, but
really? Name literally one more Punisher villain.
Oh my god, there's so many.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, the Spider-Man. Yeah, yeah.
The anti-gun lobby.
Yeah, there we go. Good one.
Picnics.
Good one.
Yeah, this dude hates picnics.
Frankenstein. Anyways, I feel like I trust Percy enough, so I'm gonna keep checking this out. But I wasn't
you're
like
in the Percy purse.
I wasn't
in
like
the purse.
Oh shit, Jigsaw, here we go. But
really, but I think isn't he like the number one villain for Punisher?
I guess it's just not a great villain.
And once again, I don't mean to harp on this. Could you name the number two villain real quick?
himself.
I mean, I would say Kingpin is more, but he's also, you know.
He basically killed him last issue. I mean, I actually like where Punisher is positioned here. He wants to kill people, but he's, like, struggling with his brain. That's a good spot for him. And he's, like, in New York. There's a lot of New York love in this comic. That's cool. The one thing I had to say about this is there's a situation where there's, like, a guy in a clown mask robbing a just regular convenience store. And right. The Punisher walks up to him and blows his brain out.
Right.
The guy's just robbing, like, he's walking out with, like, $27 from a 7-Eleven. Is that what we want from him? Are we like, that's good. Good work, Pete. I'm asking you, Pete.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's a little over the top. You know what I mean? Like, if he was robbing a 7-Eleven and got like a hot dog or something, then I could understand shooting him in the face.
Oh, but, sure.
Because you know, okay. He got so a very old hot dog? Because he ate garbage meat stick.
How many taquitos? How many taquitos at 7-Eleven does he have to steal for it to be murder?
Three.
Well, because like,
three. So if he steals two, it's just blow out the decaps.
So, yeah. So what's that? 40 cents of product, and you're dead, according to the Punisher. Three taquitos. Because I mean, like we're talking about it in a pretty flip way, but it is something I don't quite understand about the Punisher. Where we are, where he does kill anyone for just robbing a store. I'm like, that's not what we want. He's supposed to kill.
But his brain hurts right now, so it's a little all jumbled up.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know I was talking to the Punisher's lawyer. Great to meet you. You must be busy.
Yeah, call me Foggy.
Great. All right, why don't we move on to talk about New History of the DC Universe, the Dakota Incident, number one from DC Comics, written by Joseph P. Illidge, Stephanie Williams, Morgan Hampton, and Nicholas Draper Ivy. Art by Valentine Delandro, Carlo Pagulian, Steven Segoia, Fico Osseo, and Edwin Galman. Now, this is a interesting comic in terms of how it is being positioned here, because New History of the DCU was a four-issue series by Mark Waid that was essentially an encyclopedia laying out the current continuity of the DC Universe. This is not that. Instead, this is showing us why and how the superheroes of Dakota ended up as part of the DC Universe, or at least how that happened and how that integrates with the history of the DC Universe. It also spins off of Static's surprise appearance in the Kids Are All Fight special. So going in expecting it to be a little encyclopedic, I was surprised at not being that at all. But I got to say, I really dug this story. I thought they did a really good job of incorporating these heroes into a little pocketed time when Lex Luthor was president, which I thought was pretty cool. I don't love the aged up Static that we get here, because I think he works best as like a cool teen with cool electricity, but it is what it is.
But we've seen this older Static in another comic recently as well. So like
but that was in the future. That was the Batman Beyond Static crossover.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, I don't know. I was hyped for that. I liked the older Static. And so, like, if we're going to make that the DCU's current Static, I think that's cool. And I just really liked where the story this comic told and the way it positioned these characters. And it was a little, like, having all the Justice League show up and be sort of the bad guys, sort of like a bureaucracy that isn't taking care of anyone, and sort of like, we're going to really keep our eye on Lex when he fucked over everyone in Dakota, was, I think, like, cool, interesting, different, and it made for a story we don't usually see. I want to bring back all of these characters and have them be a more present part of the DC Universe.
Yeah, agreed. Also, cool cover. I also really liked the ending. They did a great job getting you kind of hyped. I just hope there's going to be more, because it was like I was in by the end. So I just...
Well, I don't know if there's going to be more of this, but there's clearly a push to, at the very least, integrate Static into the DC Universe. So I'm guessing we will see him hanging around for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, just to jump in with Justin's side of things, you know, just because someone's older, Alex, doesn't mean they're not cool anymore. You know what I mean?
Like, I wouldn't know.
Why would that ever apply to any of us?
Oh, what? Void Rivals, number 27 from Skybound and Image Comics. No, that was a cool thing that cool teams.
He had a young person stroke. You don't smell burnt toast. You smell like a Miller High Life.
Four Loko.
The youngest thing you could think of was Four Loko. You smell a Zin pouch, is what you smell if you're having a young stroke.
Man, I miss Zima. Written by Robert Kirkman.
Something different.
It is. Z's All the Hotness with Zunes, which are really picking up, I think. Art by Andre Bresson in this issue. Pew, pew.
Tell me more of the plot of this issue.
Sharktacons! I know, that's what I'm saying. Tell me what the plot is, because the plot is Sharktacons eat a planet, period.
Yep. Yeah, and they're like, hey, man, we got to do something about these Sharktacons. I was confused by the last panel reveal a little bit, but this is just fun.
What? You didn't know who that guy was?
No, I didn't, which was a little disappointing.
Oh, no, the guy at the end, I don't want to spoil it too much, is one of those large helmet guys.
Yeah, I got that from when he had the helmet on.
From Void Rivals.
But what I liked about the cool cover that we see is we get a little G.I. Joe the Animated Movie shout out, so that was exciting. You know, Pythonna, she's a badass, so it was great to see her in this.
She's from Cobra Lai, she announces.
Yeah. You got the little back matter description too.
Mike, sort of a anchor character in this comic is Handroid, and I just didn't get enough to know what was happening with Handroid here.
The Handroid.
While we're talking about anchor characters, I can't help but know Skuxoid has been off camera for several issues
now. You've got to be heartbroken by that.
Yeah, I think you can really chart the downfall of this comic based on the lack of Skuxoid.
You know, we've been reading this comic since the first issue, and like it made sense the premise made sense. We introduced a lot of ideas for the Transformers and stuff. Epic, like the reveal of the Transformer was so great.
Yeah,
but it has gotten, even when we started doing the Skuxoid thing, we were like, this is funny. It's weird. It's weird how much we're spending our time with this Skuxoid guy, and we've gone so far beyond like doing something that feels away from the central premise of the story that I just don't know what to hold on to here. And I don't know, maybe it's worth a read.
Here's the thing to hold on to is midway through this issue, we get a huge reveal of what's going to turn the tide of the Quintessence War. And you know what? It's Energon. And when they came out with that, I was like, cool, the stuff Transformers eat. Great. Yeah, More of that.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like the things that I think that's meant to ground us. And I'm like, yeah, but what? That's not a story. That's like being like, you know what these people need? Water. And it's like, yeah, sick. Me too.
We're gonna keep reading it until we die.
I think I'm gonna go back and reread it and see if it makes more sense. Maybe that's a challenge. I'll write this down.
And keep rereading it over and over and over
until it starts to make sense.
Until it starts to make sense.
Okay. Yeah. I'm solo parenting. I'll give a challenge.
Hey, there you go. I love it.
Predator Bloodshed, number one, from Marvel, written by Jordan Morris, art by Rorari Coleman with Roland Bosky. This is about a secret MMA tournament that's going on that gets interrupted by none other than the Predator hunting the deadliest prey. Our window character is an over-the-hill MMA wrestler who gets back for one last fight because he needs money for his sick kid. And, I mentioned the Predator is there. I got to tell you, we know Jordan Morris from back in the day from like comedy and podcasting, whatever. Great guy. Definitely known for his funny stuff. And most of the things that he's been doing in comics so far have been comedy things. This has some funny stuff in it, but it's mostly serious. And it rocks, I thought. Yeah. Like, this is like really well set out Predator story with really well drawn, very specific MMA characters that are cool. It's basically like, what if the Predator fought Mortal Kombat, like ended up in the middle of Mortal Kombat because some of the characters have enhancements and stuff like that? That's really fun. I had a lot of fun reading this issue.
Yeah, it is great. It's a lot of action, cool art, tons of kind of blood and guts. But I also felt like Predator was cheating a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, he's just watching these MMA
Predator
fighters.
Predator always cheats. That is one of my biggest, deepest held beliefs, is the Predator always cheats.
Well, I'm finally seeing that for the first time in this comic you showed me, because he's just sitting there clocking their moves, being like, oh, okay, this is this guy's weakness. This is, and then he's just watching them fight, just being like, okay, I know how to take. And then he jumps in. I was like, yo, dude, that's fucking... You know, you're just sitting there making sure that you can take all these guys before you jump in.
Do you think in the original Predator movie, like right before he attacks, there should be a ref there that's like, tweet, hey, cool it with the lasers. These guys just have guns.
Yeah, there's no weapons. They're MMA fighters, and they got to take on a Predator. That's fucking lopsided.
The idea of you watching the original Predator movie be like, this fucking guy's invisible. That's not fair.
Every time. And it really isn't, because they're supposed to be like, oh, we're the biggest, deadliest, big game hunters in the entire galaxy. Look at us. And we're going to hunt anybody down. Also, they have like a nuclear bomb in their wrist. It's not a fair fight. It is never a fair fight. They're the equivalent of people who are like, yep, I love hunting as a sport, when they're carrying a bazooka to blow up a rabbit.
Yeah. But I don't know if you guys have ever seen nature, but like, yeah, lions versus lambs, it's a little off. it's not exactly a fair fight.
But this is like if it
either.
Was a lion with a laser gun mounted on each shoulder that tracked the lamb.
A lamb has nothing going for it. A lamb's like, I'm a future hoodie for Alex Albin. And of course this lion's going to kill me. He's got claws. He's got teeth. Lambs have little square teeth like we do.
It's actually crazy you're saying this, because one time I went to the petting zoo at the zoo and I saw a lamb there. And the lamb said to me, get to the chopper.
Wow. Wow, that was a long
walk for that.
The
classic lamb hoof arms touching meme. I'm just saying, have you ever seen a lamb turn the tables on a lion and kill that fucker?
Well,
no.
You know, they are soft, you know, so maybe if a lamb could be like, hey, pet me before you kill me, and then the lion's like, wow, this is really soft
and then what?
And cozy.
And then what? The lamb, like, shoves its little hoof through the lion's face? Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Anyway, awesome. I think it's fine that it's not fair. I hope that our MMA fighters are going to really get their shit together and get some
sick moves. Yeah, I hope somehow they can take down this Predator. That would be insane.
But I really like the way that this book just, like, again, like, owns the situation. It's like, yeah, some people are half robot. That's fine. And then a lot of people that you just met are instantly murdered. Yeah. And that was great. Jordan's not pulling any punches for a big first issue.
Absolute Martian Manhunter, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Dennis Kemp, art by Javier Rodriguez. In this issue, John Jones has been taken over by Despero. Martian is out doing some other stuff. Also, we finally get the revelation that we knew was coming, that his son has been taken over by the White Martian, and a bunch of other, as usual, trippy, weird things are going on in this issue. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, it is very trippy. This is a very cool creative cover, by the way. It's worth it for the art alone. This Absolute book is just so creatively drawn. The panels are amazing. This issue is stressful as fuck for me. He's fucking up his marriage. He's fucking things up with his kid. This alien that is taking over his life is now darker and weirder than the last one. It's freaking me out, man. It's becoming a nightmare. But the art is amazing.
I love this. This comic is great. It's pushing the genre has been sort of the take from the very beginning of this. But what I really like about this is like the metaphor for depression here with Despero, I thought was really well done, and the loss of John Jones's sort of power, similar to Dick Jones, similar characters, was really nicely done here. He's being the Martian's being vivisected, and all of the brightness taken out of him at the same time. John himself is sinking deeper into sort of the blueness, as Despero calls it. Like, just great. I love the way everything has just is is so detail specific and like really artfully done, top to bottom. We don't need to sell you on this. The Absolute books are good.
Yeah, Alex, are you thinking about a Dick Jones T-shirt right now? Is that why you're quiet? A Dick Jones T-shirt would be fun.
Sure, I'll think about what that might be. Wrestle Heist, number 3 from Image Comics by Kyle Starks. This is one of my favorite series, month after month, per the title. It's about a bunch of over-the-hill wrestlers who get together to pull a heist on the wrestling promoter who did them all wrong. The heist starts to come together on Fightsgiving this issue, but there might be a traitor in their midst. Just greatly... really well-drawn characters, very fun situations, a crazy, deeply realized world that has its whole expansive wrestling history to it that's so much fun. Plus, the back matter at the end is so much fun as well with fake ads and other things. It's great.
Yeah, agreed. The back matter is phenomenal. The art style is just so fun. It's got a lightness to it that is just pulls you into this world that is... so well crafted. I love the vibe of the book. I love the pace of the book. I love the characters in this book. I'm really pulling for this team, even though you're not sure it's the right thing for them to be doing. But yeah, this comic rocks.
You can just feel the love pouring out of every panel. And it's really nice, the fact that it really is just Kyle Starks sort of leading it and doing the writing and the art on it is really cool. And the back matter continues to be the best back matter in the biz.
The Infernal Hulk, number 4 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Nick Klein. In this issue... well, last issue we looked at what was going on with Bruce Banner. This issue we find out what's going on with Hulk while the Infernal Hulk is on the Earth-wrecking shop. And not just one Hulk, but many, many Hulks come together. This also includes a panel layout that Philip Kennedy Johnson told us about back on our podcast a couple of weeks back. So you can go and listen to that for more info on what's going on here as well as the future of the series. But Pete, I know you're pretty psyched about this one. And in fact, Philip... specifically said, Pete, you are going to love this issue. I know you hate Marvel, so did it balance out here?
This was so awesome. This was unbelievable. This was so fucking cool and badass. First off, let's back up the truck and just shout outs to this amazing cover. So many hot Hulks. It gets you excited for the insides. And holy shit.
That's what a good cover does.
Yeah, I agree.
And a good face for a person. Mm-hmm. Whoa, gets you excited for the insides.
I was going to say skin, like the skin of the animal.
This got weird fast. Yeah, I don't want to lose the thread that this is an amazing comic, and I want to take a moment here and just talk about this art. I mean, these panels, they're just tripped out, but also so well drawn and so beautifully drawn. The Green Hulk that we get in here in this tripped out candy mushroom world was just so beautiful, but also so weird and tripped out and crazy looking. The smaller Hulk fighting like a bigger Hulk, it was just unbelievable. I'm not sure exactly what's happening, but you know, when it got to, you know, Gray Hulk there, when we saw Joe fix it, I was losing my fucking mind. All these pages of these monsters just looking so cool, so epic. It was just so spectacular. And this kind of mother of horrors thing is just so crazy. But now what's great is we got a plan. Like, the Hulks have got to kind of try to team up to take on the mother of horrors. And I just felt like this was such a banger-ish, and I cannot wait to see what's going to happen next. This is just unbelievable comics. It's super tight nanners out here.
Yeah, we got tight nanners out here. The weather report is coming in. I feel like this has like the vibe of like a nightmare where you just keep seeing different flashes of scenes and it's all just featuring the different Hulks. it does feel like a statement issue from Philip Kennedy Johnson, as he sort of, we had the horror, the everyday horror of Bruce Banner and Betty at home last issue, and this is like sort of the internal fantasy sequence horror of what's going on inside the Infernal Hulk, and really setting the stage for a disastrous battle. But as he said, and as was teased, I think this week, there's a massive event coming up in the future mm-hmm. where it's going to be the Infernal Hulk versus essentially everyone. And that's his big third act from this epic run that he's been on.
It's, yeah, it is epic.
Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong 2, number 7 from DC Comics, written by Brian Buccellato, art by Christian Duce. This is the final issue of the series, as the Justice League and a lot of monsters all fight, and some of the Justice League are large, and they fight, and that's the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, don't cut it short. This is a blast of a comic. I mean, it's just so much fun. It's huge, giant fights, cool team-ups. It's everything you want in this ridiculously long title, and I think they do such a great job of delivering on it. It was a blast and a half. I just I was having so much fun with all the kind of the fights and the looks and the nods and the Godzilla nods. Superman being like,
Pete, don't take
up?
All of my – I was going to hype up the nods.
Dude, I love the nod look. In here, bro.
When come Mothra on, nods, Mothra's
my
like,
my life would be
uh-huh.
complete if I got the nod from Godzilla like Superman got. I mean, that
the
was
god
badass.
Nod? You want the god nod.
I want the god nod.
Yeah, you want the Nodzilla, as they call it.
Yeah, Justin, what did you think about this?
I mean, it's a big, it's certainly big.
It's a big comic.
It's a big thing.
Well, it's fun. Come on.
I got to say, there were pages in here.
Yeah.
Stop it. Come on, guys. This was a blast.
Here's what I'm going to say about this, Pete, because I like the MonsterVerse stuff. I really enjoy it. I also like DC Comics. Which I can't remember. You don't like Marvel Comics. That's right. We established that. You also like DC Comics. So we have this in common. We like these things. And I even enjoyed the first Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. This had no plot.
Yeah.
The problem with this is it started, and we've talked about this incessantly with every issue. The first one had this emotional through line of Superman and Lois. The second one started this emotional through line of Barry Allen and Iris and what was going on with Barry because they just got married at the beginning. And this last issue, Barry Allen's like, well, I'm also here.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Then
Which
also
is smart.
They put in this thing about Harley trying to find an alternate Joker. And she finds out he's just like a cloud.
A regular clown. I was so confused by that. That was such a funny, heartbreaking moment.
What does it have to do with anything? Also, there was all this stuff about Lee Shaw and the Suicide Squad. I don't think we ever found out what Lex Luthor was up to in Hollow Earth or anything like that. Or I don't even know if they went down to Hollow Earth. I know they were in the Monkey Cave. They were definitely in the Monkey Cave.
It just felt a little messy. In this moment, that really stuck out to me. Like, Superman, Supergirl, and Godzilla just wreck this dude with all their different visions. And then there's a moment where Superman, Wonder Woman, and Supergirl take a knee for all the monsters.
Show respect.
And Martian Manhunter is like, it's an impressive show of respect. They're bending the knee like he's the king of the monsters because he is. I was like, what? what are these heroes talking about? Batman in the back is like, sigh. I'm like, what?
Yeah, Batman's not going to take a knee. I thought this was just... I instead of me skipping over the human parts, they were just like, all right, let's get rid of all that and let's just focus on the monster fighting. So I was very excited about that.
Yeah, but even with the monster fighting, you could give some stakes. There were no stakes here. That was the problem.
Well, you know, I mean, fine. If you want some stakes, all right, I can see that as a gripe, but I was very happy to turn off my brain and be like, yes, have my heroes be huge and be able to fight alongside Godzilla. Yes!
I like that Pete gets mad when we criticize a comic because it's like, Alex, the comic's right here. It's right here in front of you. Can you hear you talking shit about it?
It's true. It's true. They do. The Power Fantasy, number 16 from Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Casper Wingard. Last issue, we ended with a huge cliffhanger that seemed like one of our characters was going to open up the pit of hell and destroy the entire world, opening up several questions about what the series was going to be going forward and whether there would be an issue after 16 since they hadn't solicited anything forward. Surprise! There's a bunch of big twists that are going on here in this issue. I'm almost hesitant to even spoil what happens, but it is a absolutely wild issue of the power fantasy that ends in a fantastic place. Great. Every issue of this is great.
Yeah. It's the art's unbelievable. There's just such amazing panels in here. Just kind of really feels like this epic story that they're trying to tell. The only part that kind of pulled me out, and it's a small part, but it was just the pizza handoff that was being handled like no one had ever held a pizza before. So it was a little weird. But other than that, I was having
a great
time.
What do you think's wrong with that? I'm looking at that right now. Like,
you're handing it to someone the wrong way. You pick it by the crust and then you hand it to somebody. You don't hold the small part. You can't do that. Also, nobody has plates. You know what I mean? Like, why you
hold it when you hand over pizza? You hold it by the tiny end of the triangle, right, and shake it. Yeah.
No, that's a horrible way to handle pizza. That's just a
bite. Feed enough fish to a seal.
What the fuck is that?
Here's a little treat. Catch it on your nose, you little circus clown.
It was just backwards pizza handling.
It was weird, especially that was like a very dramatic moment. It's not like this is like a off-panel, mini-panel thing. This is like sort of the big crux of the end of this very important issue of the series. And she does, I mean, I will say she is a very powerful character. Maybe she doesn't have time to know how pizza works.
Okay. Maybe that's the point of the next arc. I guess we'll see.
And let me say, one of the geniuses of pizza is that often you don't have to have someone else touching it. You get to pick it up from the box.
It's one of the rare foods that you can pick up.
Yeah, that everyone should be the slogan. You don't pass it around. It's like sushi. You pick it up. don't pass me the sushi.
Also, if someone handed me a slice that way, I'd be like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Well, it makes sense.
Also, I don't want to back off on this. I was all in on this pizza. You pick it up slogan. We were kind of throw it around, like, you know, the old football. But I feel like that might make people think, like, wait, we don't deliver when we do deliver. Mm. If it was like pizza, you pick it up, it would be like, oh, I guess I got to go there.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. No, we deliver, and then you pick it up. Is it too good? You think it's confusing? Yeah.
It might imply that, like, they're delivering, and at the same time, you got to head to the pizza place to, like, pay or something.
Sorry,
like
the place
that,
is called the Pizza Fantasy, Alex. Just to be clear. And it's like, don't worry, we deliver, and then you pick it up.
I can't tell if people hate us right now or
well, they're not here, Pete. They're listening in the future.
No, I'm just pausing because I'm trying to think of pizza flavors based on Kieran Gillen and Casper Wingard.
I'm so sorry. Coming up blank. Pizza flavors? Flavors. Where's the flavor in the crust in this situation?
Oh my god,
I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like so
anyway.
Dice
follow
and
our journey on the pizzafantasy.com.
But I keep getting stuck on like Kieran Gillen. Is that some sort of fish? Like there's some sort of fish.
Yeah,
in there,
we definitely are headed toward anchovy. When I feel like there's got to be.
You think
something
of Kieran Gillen and you think of fish?
I just feel like there's a fish that sounds like Kieran Gillen, and I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah. Can't put my pizza finger on it. This is a great comic. This is a very, like, carefully made comic. Capers? It's a cultivated comic that is it is coming to a culmination point that we are
culmination.
We are talking about in the wrong way, but it is excellent. Like a great piece of triangle pointed pizza.
I feel like Kippers Wingard. Kippers are sardines, right?
Yes, but no one would ever say, like, can I get Kippers?
Capers. Oh, Kippers Wingard.
No one wants capers on a pizza either. That's a wild pizza.
That's a wild pizza. Yeah.
We'll keep working on this. We'll let you guys know when the store opens. Let us know when the store opens in the comments
below.
It's
a store. It's like a dollar store. We deliver, and then you pick it up.
Oh, man. Look at this. Look at this cool cover right here. I'd like to pick this cover up.
I'm good.
I'm good. We're good.
I'm doing great.
Did you just quit?
Pete desperately tried to move on. Pete literally setting up his own comedy. He's like, man, check out this cover. Oh, man, sick cover. Pete's literally doing a one-man show right now. He's like, oh, man, you got to check out this cover. Yeah, really sick cover. Pete, you could just start talking about this. Iron Man number two
for Marvel, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Carmen Carnero. Iron Man is dealing with a plot by Madam Mask and AIM, which is aimed at creating a new Tony Stark rather than a new Iron Man. And in this issue, we're dealing with the history between Whitney Frost, a.k.a. Madam Mask, and Tony Stark, as well as what Tony is trying to do to take this down. We really like the first issue, and I gotta say, I really like the second issue as well. Joshua Williamson has nailed that breezy Iron Man who still has unbelievable world-ending stakes to deal with. Plus, Carmen Cadero's art is just great. I love that, you know, I kind of forget that Tony and Madam Mask have a romantic thing going on. So that's a fun riff. We've been seeing the character a lot of the Marvel Universe. They even reference her appearance in Venom going on here. But fun stuff throughout.
Yeah. It's... go ahead.
You go.
I thought ruining MODOK's vacation was a little rough. But other than that, I thought this was fun. I like the twists and turns, and yeah, enjoyed the story, enjoyed the art.
It's fun to see MODOK like out of armor.
Great.
It's just his loose head, and he's wearing like a flower tiara, sort of.
Yeah, he's doing like a whole Dionysus thing going on.
Yeah. It was funny, and he's just like still floating in a like tepid, like foot deep water. I was like, disgusting. But that's when a big head goes on vacation. The romance between Tony and Madam Mask is nice. It's hard to square this character with the Madam Mask and Venom that is like the ultimate bad guy who's like being straight up evil to Venom, Mary Jane. But I like this version of it. Like, I like the idea that she's someone that is just a sort of spy, espionage person on the other side, and they just have this wild chemistry. So I actually wish we got more of that in this. And yes? Yes, Alex?
I just remember the pizza slogan.
Yeah. Well, it's really good.
I'm fine.
It's really good.
It doesn't seem like you are. It seems like we've broken you finally.
No, I'm good.
No, but it's because he's literally trying to start the business that we were talking about. The pizza fantasy. He wants to make the pizza fantasy a pizza reality. So, like, I hope we get more of their backstory. And maybe I'm just like a rom-com pilled between Tony Stark and Emma Frost, and now...
But this is Whitney Frost.
Another Frost, unrelated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, but it's okay. I just love...
He's got a thing for Frost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great stuff. I didn't realize we were putting this back-to-back, my bad, but Superman number 35 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, Eddie Barrows and Eber Ferreira, and Julio Ferreira, no relation. I'm kidding. They're probably related. Anyway, this is a DCKO tie-in as Superman has been killed in the DCKO tournament, but Lois Lane and Superboy Prime are trying to take a Superman robot to the Time Trapper, also known as Doomsday, in order to give him a vital piece of information about the tournament and the future. And they end up in a big fight with the Legion in the process. Another great issue from Joshua Williamson. I thought, like, these tie-ins have been really good. I'm not sold on the Time Trapper necessarily, but I do think...
You're really resistant to the Time Trapper. Why?
Emo Doomsday. It's a lot.
What is it about it? Is it the look? Is it the fact?
It's the emo. Yeah, it's the thin...
It's the look. Doomsday. It's the fact that it's a talking skinny Doomsday.
Yeah, it's emo Doomsday. It's a little weird.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd say emo, but I hear what you're saying.
I like it. I think it's okay. I like the character, and it's clearly...
Would you prefer weight loss Doomsday? Would that be better for you?
Ozempic Doomsday.
Ozempic Doomsday.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
But he's going to have to stay on it, because otherwise you just gain the game.
That's how they get you. You gain the stony Kryptonian rocks.
Ozempic does sound like a Superman villain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, great idea. Thanks.
Dan Slott's already written it.
I continue to love the Evil Legion in this event. I like that they were sort of like introduced and then left to the side, and I like that they've become much more central as it's been going on, especially for Superman. And you know what? I don't usually love Superboy Prime, but I'm getting on board here.
Oh.
Anybody else? And yeah. I actually like Time Trapper Doomsday.
What?
So I'm
you like Trapper Keeper?
I'm in on all of this. Yeah.
I think my other issue, even though I love this as a kid, as an adult, I'm not a big fan of the all powerful character who stands by the side type thing. Like that whole trope.
And then later it's like, I'm the only one who can save the day. It's like, yeah, we knew that since you fucking showed up, man.
Yeah, I played that game when I was like 8 years old. I'd line up all my action figures on the floor and Rodimus Prime would stand on the shelf over there and be like, it's not time yet.
He was the hero.
Soon. Yeah, he was the greatest hero.
Because he looks so
And after all the Cabbage Patch Kids got taken out and all the He-Man characters and everything, then he'd come in and save the day.
You think Cabbage Patch would go first? They were like the infantry.
The second strongest character was my...
can we get a power ranking real quick?
Yeah.
Sure. Most powerful character was Rodimus Prime, obviously. Right. Second most powerful character was a eraser, Cabbage Patch Kids eraser I had, who was called Super Dicky.
Oh, it's very funny.
Did you say Dicky?
We have talked about this before, by the way.
The Cabbage Patch that I got was named Dickie Francis, and so
we have Dick Jones and now Dickie the
Francis.
Eraser.
So my eraser was Dickie Francis Jr., and then he had gained powers and he became Super Dickie.
Yeah, I love it's almost like this. Super is Bang. So real. It's so real. When you're a kid, the toys, you're like, well, this is really important. I'm like, that's a Fruit Loop that you found. That's a walnut that you drew a face on. And I was like,
no,
it's
the third most powerful walnut.
The other thing about this Superman
Was the rankings done? Was that all of it or were there more?
Yeah, I don't remember the rest. Okay. It was kind of all just like.
Once you get to Super Dicky, I think. It's all downhill aside from there. I really like the way they, in this comic, Saturn Girl is sort of like pulled out of Darkseid by acknowledging feelings, the feeling of love. Mm-hmm. And I like, it's a very like show don't tell how you reverse the Darkseid is anti-life equation by people having people experience life and enjoy life. And that's the kind of thing that I just love to see shown in that way without someone being like, no, we have to have them experience love, and that's how we get them. No, it just happened, and we get to ride with it. And I think that will become important, more important later.
I'm sorry. It's just after you said the words pulls out of Darkseid, I didn't hear anything else you said. So my bad.
Oh, you have to pull out of Darkseid. That's the only way of not getting him pregnant.
Yeah. Catholic method.
You can also, never mind. Hyde Street number 11 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Francis Portella. This is the kickoff of the first big arc this book has done, revealing a secret butcher of Hyde Street who is hiding. We also get the origin of Sister Hood, who recently had her own miniseries. And we see a couple of other characters bouncing along as well. Pete, since we did talk about this on the live show, about how you like this, even though it's a horror book, what did you think of this issue?
Well, first off, a cool cover here. There's a bunch of variants and other cool covers as well. This continues to be great. I love the art, the writing. This is twisted, but it's also very cool and interesting. We get the sisters kind of story here and how that all kind of gets set up. And I love the back matter as well. It's some cool cereals. I wonder if those were real or not. The Creature Crisp is my favorite.
Ghost Machine did make coffee, but I don't think they've made cereal yet.
No, man. They used to even have T-shirts with the cereal logo on it. So I was like, oh, man, they got to make the cereal now. But I guess not.
You're hungry.
Yeah, always.
I really like there's a lot of great, like I echo what Pete's saying. Like Pete is saying, I really like this. The colorist I wanted to highlight here because at a certain point we drift out of color into black and white with some like affectations and then come back to it while being like some letter bubbles have their speech bubbles have different colors to them. So it's just all very like deliberately made, and that's always cool to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, Rogue number 2 from Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Luigi Zagaria. Rogue is dealing with some lost memories that are suddenly coming back, or at least they seem to be lost memories. She's gone to consult with Mystique, and once she does, her powers go out of control, morphing her like a morphing ranger herself. But not at all, actually. What do you guys think about this?
Yeah, I thought this was cool. Rogue goes to Mystique for answers, and Mystique is like, fuck you, Rogue. And then Rogue flies away and has a lot of feelings about it. But yeah, she gets into a big fight and is trying to work things out, and things kind of go sideways for her. Yeah, Erica Schultz is an amazing writer. I love the art. I'll be interested to see how this unfolds more.
Yeah, I like the mystery that Erica's building here. The art is definitely really good, just like superhero comic art with a great series of sequences here. I like the way Rogue's powers are sort of on the fritz here in a way that I haven't seen before. So this is
fun. Facts.
All right, The Flash, number 30 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid and Christopher Cantwell, art by Vasco Georgiev. This is the final issue of the DC KO tie-in as Bart Allen tries to stop Barry Allen from doing his Crisis on Infinite Earths thing. It's all mixed up with Darkseid and stuff going on with him. I will say, even though I generally enjoyed this, it is funny over a DC KO for it to be like Darkseid is this overwhelming power, the biggest thing you've ever, he's as big as a planet. And here there's like two Flashes that are tackling him.
So,
I don't know.
But I actually liked that part of it. Like, I liked that they got to like fight Darkseid and it wasn't as big like that. The other thing I really liked about this is it was able to use all the Flashes really effectively. I really felt the differences between them and why they were used at different points of this. Their different points of view. This book did a great job of just like hitting them when they are needed without it feeling like they're doubling up, which is, I think, just a tough part about the Flash family because they all have the same power set that it makes it tough. But I like the idea that Bart Allen is sort of the embodiment of the Speed Force, and the way they made this work emotionally, despite the fact that it's the Speed Force, one of the more like, wait, what is that kind of type of things in the DC universe.
I also thought this had a really sweet ending. I enjoyed it. I thought this was fun. It was just laughing because when Zalbin was like Bart Allen and then Barry Allen, it looked like his brain broke a little bit, and I started to laugh because I was like, ah. But, I thought this was great art, great action.
The Author Immortal, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Frank J. Barbier, art by Morgan Beam. This is following an author who has been sucked into a fantasy world that he loved when he was a kid, along with his oldest child, who is also meeting a fictional version of his oldest child, and they're going on various adventures. And there's other stuff going on. But
A lot.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this issue. I do want to highlight, as usual, Morgan Beam's absolutely gorgeous art. There's some terrifying and fascinating creatures that are throughout here. Just a great-looking book.
Yeah, it's almost water paintings for each panel. It's really fantastic panel work and art. I enjoyed this. Love the twists and turns. Cool cover. It's an interesting story that's got it's twisted and kind of evil, but you're kind of rooting for it anyway.
Great monsters. Combining the drama that's happening in the fantasy world that is big and mythological. There's a mystery here that we're sort of getting to. I think this issue, there's a little bit of like coyness hovering over it, so it's hard to tell exactly what's going on in the larger story. But I feel like the next issue is going to be another big reveal. But balancing that with what's happening in the real world and making that dramatic is a tough task, and I think this book does it well.
The Rocketeer, The Island, number one from IDW, written by Dave Stevens and John Lehman, art by Jacob Edgar. Ostensibly, the idea here is that The Rocketeer knew Amelia Earhart back in the day. And a year later, after her disappearance, he goes after her to try to find her. But this book, I don't know if this was out there, is hiding several surprises in its pages that I was pretty flabbergasted about in a pleasant way. I guess I'll just say, I don't know how much we want to spoil about it, but I guess I'll just say that there are a lot of things in the public domain. Pete already said one of them.
Yeah, we got, we don't want to keep listing them, but it's crazy. It's fun. Cameo, kind of like, oh shit, kind of page turn.
Yeah,
stuff.
I didn't necessarily want to list them because I think like part of the fun of the book is these surprises as these characters show up. Yeah,
well, stop. And it's a crazy, I was like, what the, why? Yeah. It doesn't, you're like, because the one Pete already said, Popeye, like, he appears and you're like, without saying who it is, and I was like, oh, that guy looks like Popeye. What a funny, it is Popeye. I was like, Popeye's here? In this,
it's also weird because they just use Popeye and Savage Dragon as well. So, I don't mind that. Like, I don't mind taking these public domain characters and figuring out a way to use them that is fun in mashups. You know, I would rather have that than like, yeah, it's Popeye, it's public domain. What should we do? Oh, he's a slasher serial killer now. There's your movie. Good night. You know, this is a lot more fun.
Yeah, like, I agree. And the surprise was just very palpable. I love The Rocketeer. Reading this, I was like, oh, I have to rewatch the movie. What a great movie. Taking The Rocketeer out of the normal environment into a different place. We're getting all the elements here, the Betty of it, the him having to solve a mystery. Nope. All that stuff's great.
Yeah, stop spoiling there. And also the art is just so bright and kind of cheerful. Yes. It's got a great vibe to it. That kind of sets up this island of fun.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of the island, the fun part about it is they do introduce all these public domain characters, surprisingly, in the first issue. There's a very strong hint of what is to come in the second issue, and there's going to be even more of that. So excited to see what happens. Very silly, fun stuff. Here's some more silly fun stuff. Hulk Smash Everything, number 3 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Vincenzo Caratu. The idea of this book is exactly in the title. What if we sent Hulk to smash everything? And in this issue, he's going up against a black hole. He gets sucked into a black hole thanks to the machinations of the leader. Can he get out? You bet your sweet ass he can. He's the Hulk. Great. This is an interesting way of rolling out the story, because you basically get like half an issue wrapping up the half of the issue of the previous issue, and then the second half of the issue starts a new fight. So it's sort of like this rolling thing going on, which is kind of fascinating. But yeah, every issue of this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is a blast. Fun last panel. Kind of hilarious moment when they see Hulk. He's like, oh shit. I also think that I really love the when he's hating on Galactus's hat. That was just so funny. This comic is just really enjoyable and tons of kind of action to propel it forward. And it seems like Hulk created all life by starting a big bang in the middle of space. So it's nice to have Hulk. That answer.
You're part Hulk.
Yeah, we all are.
A new religion just dropped for Pete LePage. Yeah. This book is like a trippy Silver Age comic written by a very modern, like, Ryan North. Everything that happens is super like, whoa, how would that ever be? But it's very like just directly and squarely written with a light sense of humor like Ryan North does. So it comes across as like a strange tone, I think, but I do enjoy it, and it really works. And I like what you're saying, Alex, about this sort of stringing the fights together, because it keeps me turning those pages.
Yeah.
Green Lantern number 32 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Montos. In this issue, you can probably tell from the cover, but Hal Jordan is getting ready to propose to Carol Ferris. Does something come in their way? You know it does.
You know it does.
You've read comics before.
Oh, man.
You know how this works. But still, fun romantic issue, good art, good fights going on here. I wish things had ended up differently, but c'est la vie.
Yeah, this is a fun issue, really fun when she kind of loses it, when proposal gets ruined a little bit. But yeah, great art, great action, fun story.
Sort of a Star Sapphire comic, really, right now.
Yeah.
At the focus and getting into more of the mythology there, while Green Lantern is very comfortably taking the back seat because there's other shit going on with her ring as opposed to his for a change.
Inglourious X-Force, number 2 from Marvel, written by Tim Seeley, art by Michael Sta-Maria. There is a traitor in Cable's midst who is going to kill President Kamala Khan sometime in the future. He's trying to figure out who it is while they're going on missions at the same time. I gotta say, as much as I'm enjoying this, not to throw out something negative, it is weird how relatively similar this is to the previous run on X-Force.
Yeah.
Just that was Forge being like, there's a secret pattern here and everybody has secrets and I'm putting this team together for a very specific reason and I can't tell them what it is as I try to figure it out and try to figure out each of them individually. I think this is more, X-Force-y with the sharps and whatever, but that was occurring to me while I was reading it.
What was occurring to me was Domino is kind of like the watcher in this issue here. She's just kind of checking things out. But her time chilling with that squirrel was very touching. I think this is a fun comic, a lot of action and fights, great art, and T-Seals. I'm all on board.
It's interesting the comparison to the Forge-led X-Force series from before. This feels a little more focused to me. And
sure.
It
Forge-focused?
Yes, Forge-focused. Yeah. It's the mystery is nice. I like the panel check-in we get here where we see Cable's vision of the different characters and how they would be killing the president. That's cool. And
Cablevision.
The Cablevision, I'm definitely on board with this mystery, and I do like that it feels – it's maybe just the boom boom of it all that feels like such essential X-Force to me. So I'm happy to go. Is she the one that did it? Probably not.
Maybe.
Boom boom.
I don't know.
You think she did? She's the –
I don't know. Probably Cable.
Right. I think we did talk about Cable's the one at the end of it because, we can't blame any of these guys. We love all these guys.
Yeah. They're lovable. Justice League Unlimited, number 16 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Dan Mora. While the DC Universe is ending a DC KO, Mr. Terrific has taken a team of time-lost heroes to hell, take on Neron, and things are going wrong from there. But does everybody rally and fight back? Oh, you know they do.
Oh, you betcha.
The survivors, anyway.
Yeah.
Because we've lost a lot of greats.
Sure have.
We have.
R.I.P.
What did you think about this, you fellows?
Crazy cover. A lot goes down. Our woman is shook. Tara's fucking shit up. But maybe there's a little hope at the end there. So, yeah. I thought this was enjoyable.
The Dan Mora art is so sick. And the colors, it's full, Halloween greens, yellows, reds, oranges. It's very, very, and it's an intense read. I've loved this run from the start because I like these sort of also-ran characters being pushed through this. The Superman character especially has been sort of a just general bummer. But I do like this. I'm wondering, what do you think about Mark Waid's love of, what's his name? Lightwave?
Airwave,
yes. Really just constant prominence.
Yeah. I think he just hooked into him at the beginning and was like, let's go. He's our window character. He's our Kitty Pryde joining the X-Men type thing. And he's kind of running with that. But there's so much going on in the title. Whatever he pops up, I'm like, all right. what's up with that guy?
Yeah. Well, and honestly, it's strange. Like, Pete mentioned The Watcher, like, 1 second ago, but he has that energy, like, oh, airwaves here? Something's about to happen. It's like, yeah. It's crazy we think that.
Also, it's airwave, Mark Waid, there's something to that. You know what I mean?
There's something. We got to work on it. We got to work on it, you guys.
Yeah.
The Mortal Thor, number 7 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Pasquale Ferry. In this issue, our main character, who is not Thor, but just a guy with a hammer attached to a string.
The hammer work, you know, this guy, first off, like, you know, they're really kind of going back and forth on whether or not this is Thor or not. It's got to be. The hammer work alone.
Yeah. Well, when we start the issue, he's already hammered. And then after the issue, he's hammered again.
Oh, man.
He'll hammer in the morning. You know what I'm talking about? High five.
Yeah. Yeah. Clap. Sorry, man. Is that a Homestar Runner quote again? I can't tell.
Hey, open that one up. The genius not dead. Right. You guys remember?
I loved this issue. I feel like this issue is the one where it's really clicked in on the tone of, like, this Thor character who is, like, not Thor, but we all know is definitely Thor.
It's got to be the hammer work.
Yeah, the hammer work.
Nobody can work a hammer like this guy. It's unbelievable what's happening with this.
I said this on the live show, but a guy who's, like, he's got a hammer on a bungee cord, and I was like, I can't get on board with this from a hero point of view, and now I am. I love it. There's a fantastic joke in here.
About a dog?
This is good. Commit to the dog bark? Keep talking?
We'll commit to the dog. Keep talking.
Great.
Pete, why don't you talk about this book while Justin mutes and take care of his dog? What do you think about this?
Well, I think this is fun. And, you know, this is exactly what it's like to take a taxi in New York City. I think they really captured it so well, you know, that...
Do you mean a hay wagon in Country Bumpkin Town or wherever you live?
No. Pete, calm down. Pete saw the movie Taxi with Queen Latifah, and he knows all about Taxi.
Great movie, man.
I like that, because there are two references you could have made, Taxi Driver, Taxi, and Alex, you made the right one.
I know. We're talking about Pete here. This is great. The art is gorgeous, like you guys said. The action is a lot of fun. I love this mystery about whether this is Thor or not, to the point that I kind of think maybe it isn't Thor. There's going to be another twist there, but I guess we'll see.
I love there's a joke in here where the girl that our almost Thor is hooking up with is going to work. Do you remember the name of the restaurant?
No.
It's... OGI Mondays, I think. Oh God, it's Monday, which I think is best joke of the week from the stack, I thought.
Oh, man. Maybe it stands for Garfield Hates Mondays, or?
Maybe.
Nope, that's not how the letters were.
Star Trek Deviations, Threads of Destiny, number 1 from IDW, written by Stephanie Williams, art by Gregory Maldonado. This is focusing on the old school original Star Trek crew. Go to a strange planet that is full of time doors. Uhura falls through one of them, and where does she fall? Right in the middle of the civil rights movement, and meets none other than Martin Luther King. So this is... that's what happens in the issue. The only other thing that I was going to say is the art style is very old school. It's not exactly the same, but it's almost adjacent to the old Star Trek animated series, if anything.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it looks like. I thought this was really cool. It's not the sort of thing I would expect in comic book form, but it fit right in with the original series. Having Uhura meet Martin Luther King is a cool idea. And I imagine this is a Black History Month book, most likely. So it ties in really nicely to that, paying tribute to at least two icons.
Yeah, I thought it was a really beautiful story. Love the ending. So touching, so powerful. I just thought it was such a great use of the Star Trek characters. Really great art, nice timing on a beautiful story.
Really felt like a original series Star Trek episode. Like, they did a great job. And the look is, like you said, the animated series. But wow, did this feel like, oh yeah, someone just came up with this idea where there's a weirdo who controls America's time on his planet, and they just hang out with him and then leave.
Last but not least, Wiccan Witch's Road, number 3 for Marvel, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Andy Pereira. In this issue, Wiccan has discovered the Demiurge, a godlike being who connects to the Earth, and he discovers another witch as well who wants that power. What'd you think about this?
Yeah, I thought this was fun. Love the art style, fun kind of borders along the panels of the comic. Fun Wiccan witch team up. I also like the Scarlet Witch and Storm part. Yeah, this is a nice, cool comic. Great art. It's got a like a touching kind of like kind of feel to it. So yeah, I love this.
I like Baba Yaga as a villain. Good mythological witch character to pull out. And yeah, the art is nice. The way that they are touching on the other parts of the Marvel Universe, when I didn't expect them to with this, I thought this was going to be very much sort of like the Agatha TV series, just like a full forward journey on the Witch's Road. And instead, we're actually doing a bunch of other stuff, so that's cool.
Do you guys think it's weird at all? I know we haven't gotten there, but Baba Yaga is going to be the villain also in the Magic and Colossus series. It's weird that Marvel is pushing Baba Yaga so hard, right? Yeah.
Well, I feel like that has to be like just a creative coincidence. It makes sense because it's also a Russian mythological character, I believe.
It's in the John Wick movies.
So it's sort of
different
like
Baba Yaga.
Still, they say Baba Yaga, though.
They do. Yes.
That's just cool to say, I think, is what.
It's Wiccan, and then, you know, kind of John Wick, and Baba Yaga. You know.
Wow, Pete really making a point. Oh, case closed. Pete speaking to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
Wiccan sounds like Wick. Rest my case.
Forget about a Dick Jones mystery. Talk about a Pete LePage mystery. Boy.
Yeah,
all right.
The greatest, world's greatest detective. Suck it, Batman.
That's a great note to end on. If you'd like to,
that's our ending catchphrase. I don't know if everyone listens all the way to the end, but we always end on "Suck It, Batman."
If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time. I forgot what it was.
The pizza fantasy? Yes, we deliver. And then you pick it up. The pizza slice. You pick up the pizza. Don't come to our location to pick it up because we're at your house. So we deliver and then you pick it up.
Yeah. I don't want to bust this up too much. I work for a professional ad agency, and one thing we learn is have the tagline trail off even more.
Okay, great.
People love that.
We deliver on flavor, but you pick it up, the pizza. And then we actually aren't even open yet, really.
But give us a call.
Let's talk. Occasion of the available.